Hare Krishna. Can you hear me or see me on the Zoom? Hare Krishna. Okay. Hare Krishna. So, shall we?
Sorry?
Your voice is coming little low.
Voice is low. What about now? Is it better? Is it better? Is it better now? Okay. All right, so shall we start with the Jai Radha Madhava? And you're following the usual etiquette of everyone muting their mics and so on. Okay. Hare Krishna. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Oh.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Gokula Nanda, Radha Gokula Nanda Radhe. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Acharya Stotra Sat. His Divine Grace Abhay Charana Ravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Mai Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Hare Krishna. So this is a special program for the devotees in Mysore. And we are connected to all of you on the Zoom conference. But we also have devotees joining us on the Facebook. So, welcome to all of you, and in particular to the devotees from Mysore. So, I'm very happy to be with all of you again. It has been a while since I visited all of you in Mysore. Radha Krishna Chandra Prabhu mentioned to me that you are discussing the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. You have reached up to this point. And the verse to be discussed today is, I think, 16.13, 14 and 15. So we will chant these verses responsively. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16. The Divine and Demoniac Natures, texts 13, 14, 15. They are all together and they have one common purport. So I believe those of you who have the Bhagavad Gita in front of you, kindly open up and you can chant after me, even though I cannot hear it.
Idam adhya maya labdham.
Idam adhya maya labdham.
Imam prapsye manoratham.
Imam prapsye manoratham.
Idam asti idam apime.
Idam asti idam apime.
Bhavishyati punardhanam.
Bhavishyati punardhanam.
Asau maya hatah shatruh.
Asau maya hatah shatruh.
Hanishe chaparanapi.
Hanishe chaparanapi.
Ishvaroham aham bhogi.
Ishvaroham aham bhogi.
Siddhoham balavan sukhi.
Siddhoham balavan sukhi.
Adhyo bhijanavanasmi.
Adhyo bhijanavanasmi.
Konyosti sadrisho maya.
Konyosti sadrisho maya.
Yakshe dasyami modishya.
Yakshe dasyami modishya.
Ityajnana vimohitah.
Ityajnana vimohitah.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalan Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. This is a very important topic that Lord Krishna is discussing here in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the divine and demoniac natures. There are two kinds of prakritis or nature. One is called the daivim prakritim or daivim sampada. Sampadam daivim. That is the divine nature. The second is sampadam asurim, the demoniac qualities. So abhijatasya, Lord Krishna, you must have discussed this earlier on in the 16th chapter, in the first few verses, where Krishna speaks the word, very importantly, abhijatasya, which means of one who is born with it. So generally, the qualities come with us at birth. and somebody is born with a divine nature, somebody is born with a demoniac nature. Mostly people are born with mixed natures. And we have a little bit of the demon and a little bit of the divine within us. And there is a perpetual battle that goes on between the two. You must have heard this analogy or this example on some occasions before. It is said that in Satya Yuga, those people who were demoniac and those people who were divine lived on completely different planets. The Devas lived in the Swargaloka and certain other planets, and the Asuras had their planets, and perhaps some of them lived on Earth as well. And then in Treta Yuga, they lived on the same planet but in different lands. So we had Ravana living in Lanka and Sri Ram living in Ayodhya. Then we had the Dwapar Yuga, in which they lived in the same land but in different cities. Like you had the Pandavas, who were divine, living in Indraprastha, and the Kauravas, who were demoniac, living in Hastinapura. And then in Kali Yuga, there is a further problem. The divine and the demoniac exist not only on the same planet, not only on the same land, but also within the same city and within the same person. Us has within our heart the divine and the demoniac natures. Sampadam daivim and sampadam asurim. So these qualities have been enumerated by Lord Krishna in the beginning of the 16th chapter. So you have gone through the list of all these qualities, so I won't repeat them here. Suffice it to say that in his elucidation or elaboration of the demoniac qualities, Lord Krishna is speaking about the mentality of the demoniac person in these verses that we just read out, verses 13, 14 and 15. How a demoniac person thinks and how he acts. As you know, everything is based upon thinking. And thinking, Prabhupada says, everything depends on consciousness. You may work in a factory, or you may work on the fields, you may be a rich person or a poor person or a king or anybody. You can continue to do your legitimate work. It's a question of your consciousness, it's a question of your mentality and why you're doing a certain thing and what mentality you're doing that work. So the consciousness of the mentality is the cause of our actions. So, what is the mentality, what is the thought process that's going on in the minds of the demoniac people? So, in these three verses, Krishna begins by saying, the demoniac person thinks to himself, idam adya maya labdham. Idam means this, adya means today, maya means by me, and labdham means obtained. So, as of today, I have obtained so much, meaning I have this property, I have this wealth, I have this, I have that prestige, and so on and so forth. Imam prapsi manoratham. Manoratham indicates the desires. You know, it indicates that we have many, many plans, many, many ambitions. And according to our desires, we want to obtain so many things. So the demoniac person thinks, today I have this much and I will also obtain so much more in the future. And according to my plans, according to my desires and schemes, I will obtain more and more in the future. Idam asti idam api me bhavishyati punardhanam. So I have so much wealth today and I will obtain so much more tomorrow. Bhavishyati punaha dhanam. Bhavishyati means in future I will obtain more wealth. So this is an important facet of the personality and consciousness of a person who is demoniac. So what do we understand from these words so far? Number one, that the demoniac person is always in material consciousness, thinking about what he or she has and what he or she hopes to have in the future. So the constant meditation or contemplation of a demoniac person is on material assets, on material things, on wealth, on material prestige, on material enjoyment. So this is the one-track mind of the demoniac person. And also, he's never satisfied. He's not satisfied with what he has at the present moment. I have so much today, and that's enough for me. If it comes by destiny, I'll be happy. If it doesn't come, I'll be also all right. He doesn't think like that. He thinks, I have so much. Now that quantity that he has now may be a lot, it may be less. But even if it is a lot, he's not satisfied. Therefore, he wants more and more and more. Idam prapsye manoratham bhavishyati punardhanam. So, number one, he's in material consciousness all the time, always looking at things from a material point of view, judging happiness, success, prosperity, and value and worth of something or someone purely according to materialistic considerations. And second, not being satisfied with whatever one has, whether it's less or more. We see in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna is surveying the armies, and so is Duryodhana. And when Duryodhana surveys the armies, he calculates from the materialistic point of view. And he boasts about the prowess of his generals and his army. And he tries to minimize the power of the Pandava forces. Because he's thinking only in terms of material numbers, material strength, material personalities. Whereas Arjuna understands that I have Krishna. So no matter what kind of forces, what kind of power and wealth and everything is there with the Kauravas, they are much larger in terms of the size of the army. They have many, many powerful warriors like Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya, Karna and so on. Our army is relatively much smaller. But yet we have Krishna. So Arjuna's vision was spiritual. He did not calculate things by material estimation as Duryodhana was doing. So Duryodhana was thinking only from the point of view of ordinary sense perception, of materialistic way of thinking. Therefore he was thinking victory is ours for sure, because we are much more powerful in every respect. Whereas Arjuna knew that because Krishna is with me, therefore victory is ours. Yes? Yatra yogeshwara hai Krishna, yatra partha dhanurdhara, tatra shri vijayo bhuti dhruva nitir matir mama. So the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya, explains that wherever there is Krishna, who is Yogeshwara, the master of all mystics, wherever there is the great devotee like Arjuna, who is the wielder of the Gandiva bow, there will be victory, there will be opulence, there will be morality, there will be everything auspicious. So therefore, Arjuna is the exemplar of a devotee. And Duryodhana is the exemplar of materialistic thinking, of demoniac thinking. So we find both positive and negative examples in the scriptures. sometimes the question arises, why do the scriptures also speak so much about evil people? Why doesn't it speak only about saintly people? Because you see, the primary purpose of scriptures is to give us instruction on how to live in this world, what to do, what not to do, and so on. And instruction is of two sorts, positive and negative. Positive in terms of what to do, and also in terms of the good examples to emulate and follow. And negative in terms of what not to do, on what sorts of personalities to not emulate and follow. What kind of benefits and consequences comes as a result of following great personalities who are of divine nature, and what kinds of disaster and calamity awaits us if we follow the examples of demoniac people. Therefore, the scriptures give us both types of examples. So, these characteristics of the demoniac people are very important for us to note, because as I said earlier, we have that demoniac nature within us sitting alongside the divine nature. Many times it surfaces and we have to subdue it. There is a constant battle going on in our heart. So, the divine person, on the other hand, does not think like this. Idam adya maya labdham, okay, this is what I have so far, and he's satisfied with that. Then he does not go on to say, you know, imam prapsya manoratham, that I will obtain more and more according to my needs. He's happy with it. In the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the narration of the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna, appearing as Vamanadev. He appears before Bali Maharaj, who is about to commence a sacrifice. Bali Maharaj very generously offers him some charity, because that is a custom. When a Brahmana comes to the court of a king, it is the duty of a king, the dharma of a king, to offer whatever it is that the Brahmana wishes in charity. So Bali Maharaj offered Vamanadev anything and everything. He said, take whatever you want from me. I can give you a kingdom, I can give you land, wealth, gold, horses, cows, you name it and I can give it to you. Then Vamanadev, who is in the form of a dwarf Brahmana, he begins speaking. He glorifies the ancestors of Bali Maharaj, and then he comes to the point. And he says a beautiful verse, and I would like to read that. To save time, I'll just read the translation. And I'll also read a portion of the purport of Srila Prabhupada. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 19, The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj, Text 17. O King, controller of the entire universe, although you are very munificent and are able to give me as much land as I want, I do not want anything from you that is unnecessary. If a learned Brahmana takes charity from others only according to his needs, he does not become entangled in sinful activities. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A Brahmana or sannyasi is qualified to ask charity from others. But if he takes more than necessary, he is punishable. No one can use more of the Supreme Lord's property than necessary. Lord Vamanadeva indirectly indicated to Bali Maharaj that he was occupying more land than he needed. In this material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. One acquires money extravagantly and also spends it extravagantly. Such activities are sinful. All property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all living beings who are sons of the Supreme Lord have the right to use the Supreme Father's property, but one cannot take more than necessary. This principle should be especially followed by Brahmanas and sannyasis who live at the cost of others. Thus, Vamanadeva was an ideal beggar, and he asked only 3 paces of land. And Prabhupada goes on to say other things later. So this is a very important point that Vamanadeva is making here, and that Srila Prabhupada also mentions. First of all, he says, you know, 3 paces of land is enough for me. I don't want anything more than that. Because one should only ask for what is necessary and not want to take anything more. One should not want anything that is more than that, because that will be sinful. Srila Prabhupada speaks about how today everybody wants more and more. So they earn money extravagantly, they spend extravagantly, they live what is called the high life. They like to call it the good life, but it's actually not the good life. It may be high life. Actually, it is also low life from a spiritual point of view. Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting analogy. And also, I happen to hear a very similar point that Prabhupada made in a conversation with another devotee, not a devotee, a professor of history in the Bhaktivedanta manner around 1973. It's the same point, more or less. Prabhupada says that Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that He is the father of all living entities. Indeed, He is. Sarva yoni shukonteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahadyonir aham bija pradhapita. He says, I am the bija pradhapita, I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. Sarva yoni shukonteya. So I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. So therefore, all the living entities on this planet, in the material world actually, are all like siblings. And Krishna is our father. So Prabhupada makes an interesting point there in that conversation. He says, the children have a right to enjoy the property of the father. It's not anything wrong for the child to enjoy the father's property. It is his right. But then, all the children have the right to enjoy the property. It's not only one child or 2 children. If there are 5 children, then all 5 have the right to enjoy the property. It should not be usurped by only 1 or 2 at the cost of the others. So Prabhupada goes on to explain in that conversation. He says that one, it is one's right to enjoy God's property, but one cannot encroach upon another's right. Meaning that there are other living entities who also have a right and a claim to God's property, because God is their father also. It's not just other humans who have a claim on God's property on earth. The animals have it, the birds have it, the insects have it, the trees and plants have it. So the resources of nature, though limited, are adequate for fulfilling the needs of the living entities. All the living entities living here on earth. And population is not a problem if people live according to their needs. The problem arises when people try to live extravagantly, as Prabhupada says in the purports. They spend money extravagantly. So when there is extravagant expenditure, living the high life, the so-called good life, then naturally, if everybody wants to live like that, then there will be inadequate resources. Then there will be a great struggle for acquiring those resources. And because the resources are limited, and the wants of greedy people are unlimited, so there will be much fighting, much quarrel, there will be wars, there will be crime, there will be selfishness and hoarding and so on and so forth. So therefore, it is very important that we learn the value of simplicity. And that quality is a part of the divine nature. I read somewhere some months ago that if everybody on the earth were to live the same standard of life as do people in the so-called first world. First, so-called first world means countries which are so-called developed from an economic point of view, like America, some of the European countries and so on. So this article said that if everybody were to live their life according to the standards that people live generally in the so-called first world countries, then we would need 6 planet Earths. One planet is not sufficient for people to live up to that standard. It is because people want more and more and more, and they are not satisfied with what they have. Prabhupada also used to quote this one very famous saying that there is enough in this world for everyone's need, but there isn't enough in this world even for one person's greed. You've probably heard this saying before. So this is a very important point actually for all of us. The problem of the world today is not natural resources or shortage of natural resources. The earth, as Prabhupada explains time and time again, is not incapable of providing for the needs of all the living entities, whatever the population, whether it's human beings, animals, birds, insects, aquatics. Nature can do everything. But what spoils it, what disturbs the balance, what then makes nature incapable of provisioning for the world is the fact that human beings become greedy. It is only human beings who become greedy. The greed of the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, the aquatic kingdom, etc., etc., is limited. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of some pigeons coming to a place where there may be a sack of grains that is strewn on the ground. So the pigeons will come, they will take a few grains according to their need, and they will fly away. They are satisfied with a few grains because they have filled their belly. But if a human being were to come to that place, then he would take away the whole sack. He will steal it. Although he doesn't need that whole sack, he can eat only maybe a palmful or two palmfuls of the grain at any one time. But he has a tendency to acquire, to accumulate, to hoard. And because he's always insecure, so he's always thinking of making his position more secure by accumulating more and more, because he thinks that by accumulating goods, he will become more secure in life. To some degree, yes, we all need to have some provisions, and we are all realizing this in the time of the lockdown, where indeed severe problems are coming across to everybody, and we are more than ever now realizing the need of trying to reduce our wants. There is a difference between needs and wants. Needs are very basic and simple, but wants are unlimited. There is that poem, I think it was a poem in Hindi that we used to read in school, where the poet says that if all the trees on the earth were like pens, and if all the oceans on the planet Earth were like ink, and if the entire sky was paper, and if we used all these pens and all this ink and all this paper and started writing down the list of our desires, the pens would finish, the ink would finish, there would be no space left on the sky to write anything, but our list of desires would not finish. So this is the problem. We have unlimited desires. Imam prapse manoratham. Yes? Bhavishyati punardhanam. Yes, I want more. Tomorrow I have this much today. I will get more tomorrow. The day after I will get more and more and more. And there is no limit to this. So this is a very, very important point, that the desire to acquire unlimitedly more and more and more is a demoniac quality, whereas the desire to be, or the tendency to be satisfied with what we have now, or to be satisfied with what will come ahead in life with reasonable endeavor, that is sattvic, that is divine, that is sampadam daivim. Whereas not being satisfied with what we have and wanting to accumulate and being always consciousness is sampadam asurim, the demoniac nature. And also, apart from this, as we will see here in the verses to come, it makes one very proud that I have so much wealth. I remember a story that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, a little parable just to illustrate a point. Once upon a time, there was a frog. And he came across this half a rupee coin, a 50 paisa coin. For those of you who don't live in India, you know that the currency of India is a rupee. So a rupee, you know, you can have coins also. And there are also half of that, 50 paisa, half a rupee coin. So now we're talking of the time when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lived, which is more than 75 years ago. At that time, half a rupee was quite a lot. The annual wages or the monthly wages of people used to be like 3 rupees, 5 rupees. And you could have a decent life with 3 or 5 rupees. Maybe 10 rupees if you were a little well off. So, he was talking about this frog who came upon this half a rupee coin. So he thought, my God, I have got half a rupee. I am a wealthy person. This is my property now. This is with me. So he placed himself on that coin and began to think that he had become very, very powerful and very wealthy. And so he became so wealthy that he started thinking that he was a lord of the earth now and that there was no power that could displace him. And he thought that let anybody come, let even the lord of the king of the animals, the elephants, let him also come. And I will just stand in front of him because now I have so much wealth. I have this 50, half a rupee coin with me. Soon enough, the keeper of the elephant of the king, sitting on the elephant, came with the elephant to the river to give the elephant a bath. So when the elephant came on the road, then the frog puffed up his chest and thinking himself to be very, very powerful, then he jumped in front of the elephant as if to challenge him. The elephant most likely didn't even notice. He was walking ahead in a royal fashion and the frog got crushed under the foot of the elephant. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that for those who are puffed up with the pride of material wealth, material prestige, material accomplishments, you know, their pride is short-lived. It is based on illusion. It is based on the mode of ignorance and it can get crushed any time. And that is a fact, because death can come any time. We have seen how fortunes can change overnight, leave alone the COVID-19 pandemic. But even in life in general, we have heard of so many instances where people who were millionaires, you know, they lost all their wealth overnight and they became very poor. And we also hear examples of people who are poor but who overnight became very wealthy. So the accomplishments and the wealth, etc. of this world is very fleeting, very temporary. and it can go anytime. So therefore, one should not place too much emphasis and weight on these accomplishments and wealth and so on. One should understand the flickering nature of this, of wealth, of material wealth. The goddess of Lakshmi, a goddess of fortune, is called Lakshmi, Lakshmi Devi. So whenever somebody has more wealth, it is a general saying in India that he has been blessed by Mother Lakshmi, or Lakshmi Devi's merciful glance has come upon him, and therefore he has acquired so much wealth. But another name of Lakshmi is Chanchala. Her husband is Chanchalapati, he is Lord Vishnu. But Lakshmi's name is Chanchala. The Chanchal means restless. Chanchala indicates the feminine. So it indicates that Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, is very restless. Restless in what respect? Not in respect of serving the Lord. She is very steady when it comes to serving the lotus feet of the Lord. In fact, she is the exemplar par excellence for the method of devotional service of Pada Sevanam. As you know, that there are 9 processes of devotional service as outlined by Prahlad in the Srimad Bhagavatam, starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, etc. So Pada Sevanam is one of them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord. So Lakshmi is considered the best example for that. So she is very resolute, extremely devoted, and very fixed in serving the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So she is not at all restless when it comes to devotional service. But when it comes to bestowing wealth upon people in this world, she is very restless. She is with somebody for some time, then she leaves that person, goes to another person, and that person becomes reduced to being a beggar or to being very poor. We see that not only in the case of an individual lifetime, where a person who is rich may be suddenly become poor and vice versa, but you also see that with dynasties of wealthy people. Let's say there's a very, very wealthy dynasty, and the wealth of that family lasts maybe for 2, 3, 4, 5 generations. And then after some time, it's squandered by somebody who comes somewhere down the line, or due to a stroke of misfortune, all the wealth is lost. It happens not only for dynasties over a period of generations, but also happens to empires and kingdoms. So human history is full of examples of kingdoms that last for maybe some 25 years, some 50 years, some 100, some 200, 250 at the most. There are very, very few kingdoms, probably, I can't think of any in recent history, in the last 1,000 years, where any empire may have lasted for more than 250 or 300 years, at the same level as it was at its zenith. Take a look at all the empires, whether in Indian history, in European history, world history, anywhere. So this is the nature of Lakshmi, Lakshmi Devi. She is very fickle. So we can never expect power, prestige, material assets, wealth, etc. to remain with us for long. And because these things will be lost very quickly, we should not place much faith on these things. We should not attach inordinate or excessive value to these things. Undoubtedly, money is important, material assets are required to live in this world. So some degree of importance naturally needs to be given to these things. But we should not give excessive importance to that, like the person with the demoniac consciousness does. And then further, Krishna says here, Asau maya hataha shatruho hanishye cha paranapi. So this is my enemy, I have already killed him. And now I will also kill other enemies who are around me. I have made my plans, so nobody will be able to fight with me. I will destroy all my enemies, and my path will be cleared. There will be no more thorns in my path. So this mentality also is an indication of the demoniac, mindset. Kamsa used to think like that. And he got together all his demoniac friends. And together with their might, he was able to have a very large and powerful kingdom, and he was a very powerful king. He became very proud, and he thought that the only thorn in my path is Krishna. So he called Akrura and told him that you go now, I have failed in so many ways to kill Krishna, but now you go and bring him here to Mathura. Let us remove this last thorn on my path, so I can become the Lord and Master of all that I survey. So the definition of a friend or enemy for a materialistic person or a demoniac person is, a friend is one who assists me in fulfilling my material desires and ambitions. And an enemy is one who comes in the way of doing that, who interferes or obstructs my quote-unquote progress on the path of material development, of material progress. However, just as everything in this world, including wealth, position, prestige, power, are all temporary and flickering, so are the so-called friendships and enmities of this world. So often do we see that people are friends today, they become enemies tomorrow. How many times we see that people are enemies today and they patch up somehow and they become friends again tomorrow? Whether at an individual level, whether at a level of families or groups, or whether between different countries. So who is a friend and who is an enemy? This is another question. So Prahlad, the great devotee, gives a similar instruction to his father, Hiranyakashipu. When Hiranyakashipu is thoroughly frustrated in his plans to remove his enemies, he has only one last enemy left, and that is his very own son. He has managed to conquer everything and everyone in the universe, and he is the personification of this, of these verses that speak about the demoniac nature. That I have killed these enemies and the other enemies also I will kill in future. I have this much today, I will acquire more and more in the future. So Prahlad was the only last impediment in his path. And from Hiranyakashipu's point of view, what a tragedy it was that the obstacle in the path of his so-called supremacy over the universe was his own son, who was only 5 years old. And when he tried to kill his son in various ways, he was unsuccessful. Finally, in great anger, he asked Prahlad, "Prahlad, how is it that you are so fearless? Even the demigods, the rulers of the planets, they tremble when I raise my eyebrows. But here you are in front of me, facing me, standing face to face, looking at my fearful face, my angry face, and also being faced with all the different ways in which I have tried to kill you, but you remain untouched by fear. So what is the source of your fearlessness? Who has given you this strength?" And then Hiranyakashipu answers, Prahlad answers and says, "My dear father, the source of my strength is the same as the source of your strength. It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna, who is the source of the strength for me, for you, and for everybody else in this universe." And then he speaks here. this beautiful verse. Again, I will not say the Sanskrit, etc., just to save time. He says, my dear father, please give up. This is from the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8, The Lord Slays the King of the Demons, text 9. My dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoised toward everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy within this world. When one sees everyone on the platform of equality, one then comes to the position of worshipping the Lord perfectly. Very nice. So he said, don't think in terms of friends and enemies. Because the real friend or real enemy is the mind. And that's what Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita. Yes? So, Prahlad's next instruction to his father is, Dasyun purashan na vichitya lumpato manyante eke swajita dishodasha. Dasya refers to a bandit or a plunderer. So Prahlad says, Pura, in the olden days, there were many such bandits or plunderers. Shan na vijitya lumpato. They, Shan na vijitya, Shan refers to the six enemies within. You know, lust, greed, anger, envy, pride, illusion. He said, na vijitya. So they were not able to conquer their internal enemies, but lumpato manyanta eke swajita disho dasha. They conquered the 10 directions, disha dasha. But they did not conquer their own minds. And they thought that they were very exalted conquerors of this world. They developed what we would in today's language call delusions of grandeur. They imagine themselves to be very powerful. So Prahlad says, in former times, there were many fools like you, O Father, who did not conquer the six enemies that steal away the wealth of the body. These fools were very proud, thinking, I have conquered all the enemies in all the 10 directions. But if a person is victorious over the 6 enemies and is equipoised toward all living entities, for him there are no enemies. Enemies are merely imagined by one in ignorance. Again, a very important point, which is that this whole conception of friends and enemies is an illusion. It is an imagination. It doesn't exist in reality. It only exists in our mind because we think someone is our friend or someone is our enemy. Our actual enemy is our own mind if it is uncontrolled. So the demoniac person has no conception. In fact, Hiranyakashipu became so angry when Prahlad told him to control his mind and senses, and Hiranyakashipu chastised Prahlad and told him, do you think you are better at controlling the senses than I am? So even though Hiranyakashipu's senses were totally out of control, but he imagined that he was totally in control of his mind and senses. So in this way, the demoniac person is always ready to find out who is his enemy and how he can kill them. Ishvaroham aham bhogi siddhoham balavan sukhi. And then after having conquered his enemies, he will say, I am the Lord, Ishvaroham. Aham bhogi, I am the enjoyer. Siddhoham, I am perfect. Balavan aham, I am strong. And then the Adhyaha abhijanavanasmi. I am wealthy and I am surrounded by so many of my aristocratic relatives. Konyosti sadrisho maya. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. It's all about me. The huge ego is developed by a person of such demoniac mentality. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So Krishna, in these three verses, 13, 14 and 15 of the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, describes some attributes of the demoniac mentality. So the exact opposite of this is the divine mentality. So as I mentioned earlier, we have to get instruction from the positive examples and also from the negative examples. So in this case, Krishna is giving us the negative examples. He's telling us what we should not be. And the fickleness, the futility, the uncertainty of life in this material world is illustrated today in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic, where rich and poor, everybody is at risk. It has shaken up the whole world to such a degree where it has made all our plans go awry. We all have our plans for doing things, but as the saying goes, man proposes, God disposes. So therefore it is better for us to surrender to God, follow His plan, act according to His instructions, and let God dispose, let Him decide what way He wants to conduct our life. If we surrender to Him and follow His instructions, then Krishna will protect us and take care of us. Then our life will be happy and sublime. Okay, so we will stop here. We will have some questions. If you wish, you can ask some questions now. So, Radha Krishna Chandra Prabhu, maybe it can be typed in the chat. Are there any questions? Yes. Okay, so the question being asked here on the Zoom from the Mysore devotees is there some test by which one can distinguish between need and greed? So that's a good question. There are some tests, some very simple tests. Essentially, you know, even the level of the test will depend on our level of consciousness. Because somebody who is accustomed to a certain standard of living will not be able to live with anything less. So that person considers something as essential, whereas that thing may not be essential for somebody else. So let me say, be satisfied with what you have right now, even though it may be less. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't work. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't make plans to make more in case there is some genuine need for you to bring some stability into your life financially. But what it means is that you should not be obsessed with it. You should also understand man proposes, God disposes. That ultimately, however hard we may try, success or failure is not entirely in our hands. It will come by Krishna's mercy. So we will work with honesty, we will work hard, reasonably hard. We will also create time for our Krishna consciousness. We will take out time to chant Hare Krishna, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, to read and worship the Lord, and then in the rest of our time we will work and maintain our families, maintain the body and so on. with that honest, reasonable endeavor, whatever comes, fine, fair enough. Number one. Number two is that don't endeavor in such a way that it spoils your spiritual life. If you're working so extra hard that you don't have time to hear and chant about Krishna, then it's not worth it. It may happen sometimes in an emergency situation for a short while, that's all right, then you may do whatever is required. But that should not be something that continues in the long run. And thirdly, in your mind, try to think deeply about how much it is that you really need. Need it. And then reduce. Even if you can't refuse it, okay, go ahead, take it. But make sure that you use less. Don't try to live extravagantly. Don't try to accumulate, as Prabhupada says, unnecessary necessities of life. That's an interesting phrase Prabhupada uses in one purport, unnecessary necessities, which means they are unnecessary, but we think they are necessary. So if you introspect a little, you will realize they're not actually as unnecessary as you may think in the beginning. And automatically, you will be able to cut down your expenditure, cut down your wants, and the gap between your wants and needs will reduce. So it's a constant process that will go on. Okay? Any other question? Yes. Okay. The question, because obviously those who are on Facebook are not hearing this question. So the question here is that the devotees, they have been discussing the nectar of devotion, where it is also said that one must not build extravagant temples and so on and so forth. And also that we find the tendency to live an extravagant life and accumulate goods. So how can we protect ourselves from that? Well, as far as extravagant temples is concerned, one should not certainly build extravagant temples for the sake of one's personal prestige and to acquire more money and to get more fame, etc. But where there is such a need for preaching, then Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and indeed even the six Goswamis, did build temples, but only when the money came. Like Sanatana Goswami had the Madan Mohan deities, and he would keep them in a cloth bag, and he would carry the bag with him. Only when a rich man came along and gave a lot of money, then he said, okay, then he built the temple for Sanatana Goswami. So similarly, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they all had temples built. Man Singh came and built the Govindadev temple. There were others who came and built Radha Damodar temple. So like that, when wealthy people come and their wealth can be used for Krishna's service, so then that's all right. Provided it is not done for such, it is done with a pure devotional spirit. And it is done for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness and making it available to a large number of people. Srila Prabhupada one time said in Europe, when a journalist came to interview him, that when he asked him, why do you have such a big castle, which had been converted into a temple, he said, I don't need the castle for myself. I came from Vrindavan, I was living in a small room and I was quite happy there. But if I came to Europe and if I sit under a tree, will you come to me to ask me questions for your magazine, take an interview? You will not come. It's because we have this castle and we have this opulence that you are coming here in the first place to me and to see all of us and wonder what we people are about. So therefore, in the modern age as well, some degree of building of large temples is sanctioned by the acharyas. But also we must realize that it need not become so frequent and so prevalent. There are other modes also of spreading Krishna consciousness than merely just going about building big temples in every small town. We can have a decently sized temple. It doesn't have to be very extravagant. And then we manage with that and have lots of satsangs and everything, so people are attracted. Also, we must remember that not only is it extremely difficult to accumulate the money to build an extravagant temple, it is even more difficult to maintain such a big temple afterwards. So therefore, in the same way, we should also think about our personal property, the same principle. Because the effort to accumulate more and more wealth involves a lot of hard work, a lot of anxiety. And many times we are not successful and that causes agony. And even if we are successful, there is greater agony in maintaining the place. That is not easy at all. So therefore, I have so many devotees who say, well, we had this big house, but it was so difficult to maintain. It has to be clean. It has to be, so many bills have to be paid. So therefore, we have shifted to a smaller house because it's much easier to manage, to look after, etc., etc. So one should see according to one's need. If you have a very large family, of course, you need a bigger house. If you have needs for serving Krishna and what you have can help you to serve Krishna better perhaps, then all right. So by consulting with senior devotees, one can try to find a practical kind of a solution for your particular situation. Okay? So I think we'll say Hare Krishna to the Facebook devotees here. So thank you very much for joining in, those devotees who have come on Facebook. Hare Krishna.